I think if there's such a thing as a rock star guest, Sherman Alexie is a rock star guest. And, you know, we kind of like to call him a one-man culture industry. And I think that seems right. He's got novels, short stories, films, and poetry slams under his belt.
But he's not just a writer, is he? He's like a personality.
Right. He's a huge personality, a huge intellect, and he's immensely entertaining just to be around. And so here he is from an interview we did in 2001, doing a reading from the story South by Southwest from his collection called The Toughest Indian in the World.
Seymour didn't want money, he wanted love. So he stole a pistol from the hot plate old man living in the next apartment, then drove over to the International House of Pancakes, the one on 3rd, and ordered everybody to lie down on the floor. The lunch hour crowd did exactly as they were told. This was the International House of Pancakes, and its patrons were used to such things. Seymour stood on top of a table. All of his life, he dreamed about standing on a table in the International House of Pancakes. He wondered if he would be remembered. He wanted to be potentially dangerous. "Put your faces down," shouted Seymour to the diners, whose faces were already down. He said, "I want you to put your lips on the floor and tell me what it tastes like." "All I want is $1 from each of you," said Seymour. He said, "I know how hard it is to live in these depressed times. I just want a little bit of your hard-earned money." He wanted to be kind. From the floor, everybody held up a George Washington. On top of those human stems, the green bills blossomed and bloomed. "Good, good," said Seymour as he walked through the garden of money and collected $42. "Now what I need," he said, "what I need is somebody to run with me." "Where are you going?" asked one of the cooks, a man who brought his favorite spatula to work and carried it back home at the end of every shift. "Arizona," said Seymour, and the crowd oohed and awed. "But I need somebody to go with me," said Seymour. He said, "I aim to go on a nonviolent killing spree, and I need somebody who will fall in love with me along the way." From the floor, a fat Indian man raised his hand. He wore black sweatpants and a white T-shirt embossed with a photograph of Geronimo. "I'll go with you," said the fat Indian. "Are you gay?" said Seymour. "I'm not gay. Are you gay?" "No, sir. I am not homosexual, but I do believe in love." Seymour thought about that for 5 seconds, and then he asked, "You're an Indian, ain't you?" "Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Do you have a problem with that?" "Only if you're one of those buffalo hunters. I can't have a nomad in my car. You just can't trust a nomad." "I come from a salmon tribe, and therefore I am a dependable man." "Well, then, you're going with me."
That was writer Sherman Alexie reading from the story South by Southwest from his collection The Toughest Indian in the World. Why did you pick that one, Veronica?
Well, I gotta be honest, I had a little bit of a writer's crush on Sherman Alexie. He is this hugely charismatic figure. I love his writing. And it's one of the perks of working on this job is that you do get to legitimately on the job talk to the people that you're kind of fascinated with. And I did get to meet him that day, that very first interview, and he's super tall. So he is this towering figure in all ways. And I do regret one thing, though. I said the most banal thing to him that anyone can ever say. I said, "I'm your biggest fan," which I regret to this day. But regardless of that, it was an immense treat to be behind the glass as I watched him just sort of fill the studio with this crackling energy. And what we're going to listen to next is this very first interview that Steve Paulson did with him. And Steve, I know you've got a little bit of a crush on Sherman too, right?
I don't know if crush is the right word, but you know, when I think about what makes the ideal interview on To the Best of Our Knowledge, Sherman Alexie is at the top of the list. I mean, he brings together so many qualities. He's a dynamo, for one thing. He's really smart. He's funny, quick on his feet. And he also has kind of a chip on his shoulder. You know, he's out to bust stereotypes about Indians. And that comes through. And so it's like it's this amazing package that he brings together in one piece. In this interview, I asked Sherman Alexie where the idea for that story that we just heard, where it came from.
"I'm an insomniac. I'm an insomniac, and one night, 4 a.m, couldn't sleep, you know, and the worst thing to do is lay in bed. So I got up, and I go to the International House of Pancakes, and I went there, and I was sitting there, and I was drinking coffee and reading a magazine when this Indian guy and this white guy walked in, and they were a little intoxicated, but not obnoxious. They're actually pretty funny and charming and fairly quiet, and they sat in the corner. And I don't think they were lovers. They didn't have that kind of energy, but they were obviously very close, best friends, spend a lot of time together. And they were so good together and so funny, and they were making me laugh so much. And I never interacted with them whatsoever that I thought, oh, these guys need a story. These guys need a story. So I got out my notebook right there and started writing it.
Now, what happens in that story is Seymour and Salmon Boy end up, they go on this little trip.
A nonviolent killing spree.
There's very little killing involved, yes.
There's no killing involved.
Right. And they end up robbing a McDonald's in Tucson. And at one point, they stand up on a table together, holding hands. And you write, they were men in love with the idea of being in love. And then as the cops are drawing their guns, they run outside. It's a transcendent moment, of sort of a very idealistic moment, but one that's about to crash into hard reality.
Well, maybe. You know, I stole that ending from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, actually.
And I'm assuming you stole the title from Hitchcock's movie,
North by Northwest, with Cary Grant. And the idea of a nonviolent killing spree with two people falling in love along the way isn't, you know, it's age-old Hollywood story. I mean, Badlands, Natural Born Killers, the idea of this killing spree. And it was so I really played with a lot of sort of American icons and iconography about and these cinema symbols and these cultural symbols. But I wanted to mix it all up by having it be this, you know, homoerotic love story between two straight guys.
And that's, I suppose, what you're out to do in a lot of these stories is to bust boundaries.
Yeah, especially, well, most of the stories are about sex. You know, my mom read the book, you know, recently. She got, you know, she called me up and she said, are you okay?
You have a little obsession
and
here?
I said, what? And she goes, well, there's a lot of doing it in these books. And I said, doing what? I knew what she meant, but I said, doing what? And she goes, you know, having the sex. And she said that, having the sex. And I said, yeah. And she goes, well, why are you writing about that now? You never wrote about it before. And I said, well, it's not because I just started having it, Mom. But I said, I'm trying to bust stereotypes because Indians in popular culture, movies, books, anywhere, Indians do not get to have sex. And so I wrote one story with that idea in mind, that, well, I'm going to let some Indians have good sex. Good sex. Just plain, straight good sex. Having fun. A good sex story about, and then it just continued from there because it was so fun to write it.
And in your stories, the Indians are often married to white people.
Yeah, you know, because there's been some instances of white people and Indians having sex.
That has happened.
Yes.
Now, you have, to some degree, moved into the white world. I mean, you've certainly...
I've always been in the white world.
Okay.
Indians are always in the white world. See, that's the amazing thing people don't understand. I mean, regardless of my blood level of Indianness or how Indian I am, I'm also white because I every minute of my life is spent in the white culture.
Do you worry about becoming too white?
No. I mean...
Not even an issue.
No. I mean, I could change in the middle of a sentence. You know, if there was an Indian in the room, I could have the same conversation with both of you, and the meaning would be different simply if I changed the inflection of a word or two. It would change. No, that's what I'm tired of the dysfunctional model of Indian life, that it's somehow difficult to walk in two worlds. I'm tired of it. It's self-fulfilling prophecy. It's not difficult. We do it all the time. And I've accepted that it's easy, and I love it. I love being Indian American because it means I have two incredible, wonderful, awful, magical, terrible traditions to work from.
Let me ask you about the movie that you did, Smoke Signals, which is based on your stories. It's been billed as the first movie that's ever been not only about Indians, but made by Indians.
Well, it's the first feature film written, directed, produced by Indians, starring Indians as Indians to ever be distributed.
What were you trying to do with that film?
Make a movie. I mean, really, make a movie. I just wanted to make a movie. I love movies. And the fact remains that I knew that every Indian in this country would see the thing eventually. And I would say, by now, 99% of Indians in the United States have seen Smoke Signals. It's gotten to the point where I can't walk anywhere where Indians are and not hear, "Hey, Victor, what about your dad?" You know, hearing dialogue from the movie. One of the stars of the film, Michelle St. John, was at a conference. And as she was speaking, a bunch of teenage Indian girls in the crowd stood up and ripped their fry bread in half, which is another scene from the film. And they did it spontaneously. I mean, they'd planned it, but she didn't know it was going to happen. But
you're also saying that film couldn't have, and maybe this is such an obvious question that it's stupid, but that film couldn't have been made by people who weren't Indians.
Oh, impossible. 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 That film couldn't have been made by anybody but me. You know, I mean, It, you know, that's what I hated when they talk, oh, it has universal values. No, it didn't. It came from one goofy, eccentric Spokane Indian boy. It sprung from my head. And the reason why it was good or bad or interesting or boring and all that springs from the fact that it was out of my head. And that's what makes it what it is. Good art is very eccentric and specific. Good art is not universal. Bruce Willis is universal. Godzilla is universal. Good art is tribal. It's always very tribal.
What about white people who take on the trappings of Indian culture, you know, beating drums, building sweat lodges, putting dream catchers above their beds? Do you have a problem
with
that?
Basically what it comes down to is the New Age movement was just another way that white guys invented to get laid. That's all it comes down to. The whole Hemingway-esque macho guy thing had quit working because women had gotten tired of it. So guys got around. We had a meeting, and guys said, you know, we need to come up with something new. How about this sensitive thing? How about this going back to the earth thing? That'll work. We'll grow our hair in ponytails. We'll drum. That'll really get them. You know, it's really stupid above all else. And the last stage of the colonial process is when the colonizers completely absorb the culture of the colonized and make them disappear. And in this country, at this late stage of the colonial war, it is liberals, it is lefties who are the last soldiers against Indians. And they'd be aghast to think that or to hear that. And I'm sure they are aghast and all angry at me for saying it. But the fact remains is that the last soldiers, the last fight right now in the colonial war is Indians versus New Age liberals.
Who's going to win?
Oh, Indians, always. You know, my grandma always used to tell me, we were here before they all got here and we'll be here after they're all gone.
Sherman Alexie, a writer, filmmaker, and poet. His most recent book is called Blasphemy,